Hey friends, before we dive in, my new book, Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth, is out now, available on intentionalparents.org exclusively, so go check that out. Christmas is coming. What a great Christmas present to get your family praying. And don't miss our upcoming retreats, the Intentional Fatherhood Retreat, February 19 through 21, 2026, in Costa Mesa, California, and the Intentional Motherhood Retreat. We announced this April 23rd through 25th, 2026 in Franklin, Tennessee. Please come out and know that early bird pricing is on both of those events, so check that out. These retreats are spaces to pause, breathe, and invest in your spiritual formation as a parent. So learn more, get your tickets now at intentionalparents.org, and let's get into this week's episode. Before we get into today's episode, we just want to give you a couple things to be aware of. First, we want to say thank you. Thank you for everybody who has rated and subscribed and left a message. We just passed 1,000 ratings on Apple Podcast. And just a reminder, that is so helpful. Thank you for everybody that helped get us there. But please continue to share your thoughts, subscribe if you haven't, and whatever platform you listen to this on, would you please rate the podcast whenever that's convenient for you? Two other things we want to let you know about is this coming week, we are doing our Legacy Builders fundraiser in Portland. It's going to be a live event. We're so excited about it. But if you're interested in what we're going to be doing and future events and things that we're talking about and dreaming about as a team on Intentional, you can actually check out that live stream. So in the show notes today, all you have to do is check out the show notes and you'll see live stream. And that's going to be October 28th, Friday night, 6 p.m. West Coast time. Make sure to check that out. And then also we want to let you know that Elizabeth and I are going to be in Sacramento doing a marriage retreat in November. You can check out the show notes for that as well. And we're going to be doing a marriage retreat to hopefully pour into people and marriages of families who have kids with disabilities or special needs. And so we'd love to invite you out for that. If this isn't for you specifically listening, but you know somebody that this would be beneficial to, send them that info. That'd be great. This is part two today of a Q&A that we did and started last week. And this is great. We talk a ton about mom burnout and how to be intentional grandparents. And there's a lot of fun combos on today's episode. So enjoy. Ladies, you're going to have fun on this one. Please, we're going to keep this response under half hour, I hope. Introverted moms and feeling overwhelmed by the constant needs of little kids. I unleash the beast. Go.
Okay, wait. I see another question in there that just says how to survive the young years.
I think they're kind of together.
Can we kind of put those together?
Let's put those together. Okay, so two questions. How to survive the young years mm-hmm. and introverted moms and feeling overwhelmed by the constant needs of little kids. I'm not a mom or an introvert, so I'm sure I'll have a couple of thoughts, but
You're not a mom or an introvert, but you did say about a month ago after putting our kids in the bath, maybe we've told this story on here already, but you came out of the bathroom and looked at me and said, I'm so tired of giving people baths. I've been doing this for too many years. Yeah,
it was I was trying to calculate if I give each kid a bath, even if it's, you know, 5 days a week over the course of, you know, at least because we've had kids for 13 years. They've been like, we've had little kids for that chunk of time. It's had to have been like the last 13 years. I was like, man, per
That's
day, I'm in the thousands. I'm in the thousands. I was just like, yeah, I'm ready for everyone to be done with that. Yes. Mm-hmm. I don't know. No. That's not introversion, but that's just being tired, mm-hmm. being old and tired, I think is what that is.
A few thoughts coming to my mind. Let's describe what it means to be introverted, first of all, because people in our culture think of introverted people as not people persons. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not social, they're not people persons. And that really couldn't be further from the truth. I think that introverted people want to dive deeply with a few people.
Yeah.
So we want to have these in-depth conversations that go to the heart and soul of a matter, or super intelligent conversations about shared interests. It's the light chatter, big children, that is kind of exhausting and, yeah. and needing to be constantly responsive. Introverts generally are very much in their head.
Yeah.
And so you already are having almost constant conversations in your head and thinking about things. And I had four kids and, I was alone almost always with them all day, every day, sometimes late into the night.
Yeah.
And kids have a great need to be heard and to be listened to. And I knew that. And I wanted to make space in my life for these people in particular.
Yeah.
And one of the things that actually helped me is that I was very much, I edited out of my life other people who related at a more informational chattering level. And I kept my focus on my kids, basically. Mm. I had a couple good friends that I was able to talk to, maybe go on a good long walk with or have those times of good conversations. Of course, with my husband, I had all this depth of relationship because we have so much in common and so much connects us.
Yeah.
But I needed to keep my ability to chatter and to just listen to chatter pretty much to the four people that I was raising.
Hmm.
And I got the idea from an article I'd read about a famous teacher, preacher, woman, and Bible study leader who said that she had to make some big decisions in her life in order to have the capacity to do what she was doing and raise her children.
Hmm.
And so there was a whole lot, she was from the South, there was a whole lot she did not do.
Hmm.
And I feel like as an introvert, you have a certain capacity and then you're just done. You have no more capacity to communicate. And as moms, you want to make sure you're saving that capacity for the most important people in your life. So that's totally conceptual, but it really helped me to say, okay, I don't have to be at the beck and call of everybody else. I'm not going to spend much time on my phone. We just talked about phones, which used to be attached to the wall.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I am going to be present to my kids because my kids are not going to make an appointment with me when they are going to tell me what is in their hearts. It's going to be right now.
Yeah. And, introversion, as you were kind of relaying as well, also has to do with how you recharge introversion, extroversion. Yes. So, and there is, the person who wrote that book, which a lot of people don't understand, there is a middle version called an ambivert. And a lot of people don't.
Oh, never heard of it.
Ambivert. Yeah. It's basically where you're honestly a kind of a good mix of both.
Okay.
And so it's interesting because as I've gotten older and been married to my wife, who is an introvert, I have found actually, you introverts are onto something that there is I don't like being alone for too long. And I don't like too quiet is too quiet. It feels creepy, but there is a level that is really enjoyable to be able to come down and not live for everyone else's experience or be thinking about how this impacts everybody and to just be alone and just to be yourself. So I think that's also a good reminder is that it's also, I think, hard because introverts recharge alone.
Yes.
Elizabeth needs exclusive alone time, even from me or even from the people she loves most, to actually be recharged in the fullest way. So that for a long time, and at least in our dynamic, that took me a long time to honestly just accept. It was because I couldn't understand
the same thing. Now you need the same thing way more than you ever did. But I was thinking along the same lines you're saying, is that introverts need to be alone to be able to recharge and refuel to be able to go back into their life and to be with people. Whereas extroverts, it's just the reverse. They can be equally as social. It's just extroverts are recharged by being with people. That is how they refuel.
And I am, but I think there's a line there where I've learned actually over time, that is not the only way I recharge. It's actually kind of more of that ambivert space where it's no, it's a little bit of both as I've gotten older and it changes.
And I found after being a stay-at-home mom for so many years, I'm a little bit more both than I ever used to, where I will sometimes go away from a social setting and be like, wow, I actually am energized. This is strange. so sometimes what actually is refueling is spending time with a few of those deep relationships.
Yes, adult relationships.
But I think, I just think of Jesus. I just wonder so much if he was an introvert, because you think of all the times he was mm-hmm. with people, pouring out to the needs of the people, just like us as parents are constantly pouring out to the needs of our kids that are never ending. Mm. And even though the needs of the people were never ending, he always took time to go away and to pray alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I think the challenge as being, I think, even if you're an extroverted mom, but especially of being an introverted mom, is that you have to create times where you can have quiet to refuel. And I think there is such a temptation, and I know I fall into this trap all the time. I was literally praying about it this morning. There's a difference between an escape, because the constant needs is so overwhelming and the constant noise, and we can escape into our phone, we can scroll social media, we can watch a show, but that's not actually quiet. Mm-hmm. That's not actually refueling. And mm-hmm. it can help be a survival tool. And sometimes that is a tool. But if that's the only escape that you have, the only refueling time you have, it's probably not actually refueling you. Mm-hmm. And I'm like trying to work through this my own self right now. But, you know, we've talked about this before. For me, the only time of true aloneness is in the early morning hours. I know that sounds mm-hmm. horrible to some people. Mm-hmm. But for me, that it's not because I'm such a morning person. I am in some ways, but I get up earlier than I would want to. I don't just like spring out of bed at 5 a.m. Mm-hmm. I like drag myself out of bed at 5:15.
And we all know you're so talkative. You're always so chatty.
So chatty in the morning. But it's because I am a terrible mom if I'm met with the kids at my bedside waking me up. Like I just
needing something.
I can't seem to recover all day from that. I'll get up even early on our day off because I just need a minute. And then I do always try to take some time in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And the kids know this, like mom needs a little bit of quiet time. So they have a quiet time. It's different. The needs are still, I'm still aware that I still have two little kids who are going to fight at any moment and come bursting in the door. Like I'm not fully off. And a lot of times I don't technically have the time to take a break, but I'll sit down and do computer work or whatever I need to catch up on. But it's quiet. Mm-hmm. And it's not the same as those early morning hours where it's nobody needs me. Everybody's still sleeping. Mm-hmm. So I say all that to say, I think the key to, I don't want to say getting through the little years, but sometimes it is just getting through. They're it does hard. Change significantly when they're older, mm-hmm. but is you have to be almost, I don't know, just really diligent. I was going to say militant, but that might be a turnoff word for some people about carving out time to refuel, because nobody, especially if you're an introvert, can just meet the needs all the time. Be with, like, you can't be somebody you're not.
Right.
And you'll end up not being the mom that you want to be if you're not taking some of that time. And it is okay to not be able to be with your kids all the time, to say, I need a half hour, even if that means you have to turn on a show. If that means you can go have a half hour of quiet so that you can come back to the chaos and be able to be present and listen to your kids. I think that's where like having a level of self-awareness, like when, and I'm still have so much growing to do in this, but this happened to me yesterday. I had felt all week, the week's moving too fast. There's too many social things. I don't have capacity for everything that has to happen this week. And by last night,
was it last week?
Brooke bore the brunt of, by the time he got home, I was like, I can't talk to anybody. Nobody can need anything
from
me.
Let's just say we had a fake fight.
I just need to go
to bed.
It was
a fake fight, meaning it was just in her brain. Yeah. And I was saying all of these things that I had never actually said. And I was like, I really think that you might be overwhelmed and tired. And these feelings might not be rooted in what is real.
I said, I know I am. Just no, you be said, sensitive. You said,
and I was like, I don't know how I could. I mean, I probably was. I was not as sensitive as I could have been. But it's that's true. Not explaining that I was like, oh, I was unsensitive or insensitive. It was just like I was just talking in a normal way.
I can add.
So I agree with all of these things. But Phil, do you want us to talk a little bit about our routine, how you helped me through those years?
Well, I think you should. I don't remember how I helped you, so you should say that. But I do think a husband should help.
Yes.
That's what I was going to say, too. You said before on this podcast how you love to have a moment cleaning up the kitchen.
Yeah.
Well, but you know, at nighttime, you needed that break. And so, you know, I would give the kids their baths. So I did thousands of baths, too. So just so you know.
Yeah.
And I'm still alive. Okay. And, you know, redo Bible time and stuff. But that's not what I wanted to say. Elizabeth talked about, you know, dragging herself out of bed early because she has to spend time with the Lord. She learned that from you. You never sat her down and said, when you're a mom one day, you need to, she watched you do that. Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, we all need to remember as mothers and fathers, once you have children, it's a death to the self life.
Yes.
You have to lay your needs down. And I'm not talking about, you know, it's a joyful.
You're talking about martyrdom.
No, you're not a martyr. Yes. It's a joyful responsibility to give your life to your children because you're God's primary instrument in shaping them into men and women of God. And so there's a death to the self life.
Yeah.
And you cannot do this without Jesus.
No. Mm.
Because we were created to not do life without a relationship with God. And Jesus' death on the cross reconnects us to the Father. We have the power of God in our life. And so all I want to contribute to this conversation is three verses from Psalm 131. Which I love, and it has all kinds of applications, but it's titled Childlike Trust in the Lord. It's a Psalm of David. Hmm. O Lord, Yahweh, my heart is not proud or my eyes haughty, nor do I involve myself in great matters or in things too difficult for me. Well, parenting is too difficult for me, but he says, surely I have composed and quieted my soul like a weaned child rests against his mother. My soul is like a weaned child within me. O Israel, hope in the Lord from this time forth forever. So I've never nursed a baby, but I think that you girls can talk. I think a weaned child is at peace and at rest.
That's
unwheeled child is I need.
Nursing child is constantly rooting.
So he's saying like, hey, there are things that are just too hard for me, but I'm going to rest my head on the Lord.
Yes.
And so I think that I watched you, Diane, lay down your life for 30 years. You lay down your life for our kids. And you saw that model to some degree in my mother and your mother, who served their families in different ways. And I just feel like I just exalt mothers. It's like the husband is to lay down his life for his wife. And we both mentor our kids, but I think moms who really get this, that they're going to be this woman that can shape their children. And then if you actually can pull it off with the Lord's help, man, the reward is the payoff is like amazing when you see your kids grow up and walk with the Lord and then start doing the things. Elizabeth's getting up now like you did for many years because you knew I have to spend time with God.
Yeah.
And so I just think introvert or extrovert, you have to remember it's a calling and it's a joyful responsibility, but there's payoff, there's fruit, there's reward on the other side from God himself, but also from your kids. They will, Proverbs 31, they will rise up and bless you and say, many have done nobly, but you excel them all, you know. It says your children will rise up and bless you. And your children are rising up and blessing you, Diane. Yeah, like John Mark wants to be like you when he grows up, not like me.
So it is amazing to be at this other end of raising children and look back. And I remember the exhaustion, feeling like you just can't go on anymore, any longer. But I also remember shaping my life around I'm responsible for the lives, the heart, the soul, in many ways, of these four little ones in my home. They're looking to me in order to someday be able to attach themselves to God himself. And now, that was before we knew about attachment theory and all that stuff. But I think instinctively, a woman who is trying to listen to God knows these things. And I remember how exhausting it was. And but we really did incorporate I don't know, margin in my life, I guess, by eliminating a lot of other things, mm-hmm. we incorporated times for me to be alone every day. So I also got up early and, you know, went downstairs where it was quiet, quietly made some tea, spent time with the Lord. But then by the time my kids got up and wandered downstairs with their blankies and teddies, my heart was ready for them. And so then I welcomed them onto my lap and finished my quiet time quite often. And you can teach children to be quiet and to just
how
be restful
you
while you are.
Tell me how, because yeah. we have a couple right now that are just forgetting yeah. the inside volume. No,
I'm not saying you're going to, you don't want to overdo that.
No,
I mean,
I'm joking.
You really don't.
But, I'm totally
but
joking.
There was a quietness about our mornings that mm-hmm. was probably because of my great need
that's
to
actually,
be quiet.
That's the case here yeah. too. Our yeah. kids are definitely, yeah. yeah.
I think
and then I also slowness. Took a break. Yeah. During the day, we always took a break mm-hmm. and I was very much less accessible. I'm very glad we didn't have iPhones at the time mm-hmm. because those were times of me, I love to read, of diving into some of the parts of me that probably would have laid dormant otherwise.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then in the evening, Phil took the kids. I finished dinner. As soon as he walked in the door, he was on. Mm-hmm. And I finished dinner. He gave them a bath, did Bible time. Sometimes I joined him. Most often I didn't. And the two of us put the kids to bed early. And then every evening I started this routine of taking a bath. And it was way more than a bath. It was, you know, candles and bubble bath and good smelling lotions and reviewing the day, which I didn't realize then is now, you know, the spiritual discipline of examine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But me, it was just soaking in the tub, taking care of myself, reminding myself that I'm not just a mom, I'm a woman as well. And kind of going through the day in my head. Mm-hmm. And we were able to do that because our kids were all pretty good sleepers. They did all go to bed. And I know that that's just not
the
story
the case,
a lot of times. Yeah. And especially if in this world where anxiety is such at a high level, kids are all, no matter who your child is, they're more anxious before they go to bed.
Yeah.
So we did do some things to kind of help that. But there, and then also Phil started giving me what we called mom's breaks.
Yeah.
About once a year.
Yeah.
He would take the kids for a weekend and
we didn't have any babies then, but you know, we moved to Oregon and your parents were in this beautiful log home in the mountains and it wasn't super expensive to fly you to Sacramento and your parents were thrilled to get time without me around.
Yes.
We just get our daughter.
Yes.
And they treated her like a queen. She got up there and her favorite meal was cooked and her mom had her bed turned down. Your mom turned the bathwater on for you. But no, I knew that was
so
life.
Funny.
She'd come back restored. So
and
I think
wanting,
that,
that time away from the kids was so good for a couple of reasons. Phil learned how to carry the load that I was carrying and was so appreciative. The kids learned to turn to dad for what they needed. And I came back ready to give.
Yes. Yeah,
anxious to give. Mom would have a bunch of recipes that I could copy. So I, you know, I got so tired of cooking every meal. But I come back refreshed even with those things. And if you can do that, if there's a way to trade with a friend or you know, for us, it was just once a year because it involved a flight and money was tight. But taking care of yourself in the midst of these years is essential.
Yeah.
Or you will grow into a warped, needy version of a mom that will do damage to her kids.
Oh.
So just listen to this carefully. Yes, Phil's exalting me and saying all these great things, but I want to say to you, don't become a martyr to your kids. They will not appreciate your martyrdom. They may never appreciate or even know the details of some of the things that you did. And you're not supposed to remind them. It's not okay to do that kind of thing.
That is such an insightful.
You're doing what you're doing as unto the Lord and not to win the Mom of the Year award. And we all start off at different places too. Mm. Some of you are just, you were just like born with good character. You're patient. You're cheerful. You are balanced. And some of you were really well trained as children. Your parents really helped you to learn how to wait for things and how to be patient when you didn't want to and how to be quiet when you just were dying to talk. And there are others of us who were not. And so we're starting from behind. So be kind to yourself. You are starting behind. You are having to reparent yourself. Therefore, you're not this paradigm of virtue that you want to be when your kids are five and four and three. And just be kind and not judgmental to yourself. As far as surviving the little kids' years, the most important thing is that you're doing everything you can to flourish as a person and as a woman. And then the rest you leave to God and realize that kids are amazingly resilient and forgiving.
If the husbands can help though. So it's like, and Brooke, I've seen you do this. Like, Elizabeth, what do you want for your birthday? I want some time alone. So what? You got her a hotel room in bed and she got 24 hours by herself, right? But you did the same thing. You didn't fly her anywhere. You didn't, recently did. You flew her to LA. But you're finding a way to do it with four kids. And I just think that that's the husband's responsibility.
I think you have to figure that out. Because Elizabeth has a lot of something to say, and I want you, because I think I want you to finish and connect with what your mom was saying. But yes, just to the men, figure out what your wife needs. Figure out who she is. She might be more extroverted, but she still needs the help. Just because she likes those activities doesn't mean she wouldn't appreciate time away. And I think one of the only thing I was just going to share is this is going to be really hard if you guys have tension in your marriage. So it's going to be hard to want to give your spouse something when you don't feel like they deserve it. And so I would say that's step number one is forgiveness, repentance, honesty about how you guys are moving through the world and how your words or actions have hurt each other, because it is really hard. Like what you guys are talking about right now is beautiful. And I know we've experienced too, but it is very hard. If I'm being transparent, it's hard for me to want to do that and be super helpful for all the things that she needs when I feel like I've been wronged and like we haven't been able to work that out. Mm-hmm. And the tension there, like I don't want to do. I mean, like human nature, we don't want to do good when someone has done something not good to us. And we're always a part of the problem because it always takes two to tango. So it's my fault. It's my responsibility. And it's also our responsibility to get to a space where we're working
that
out.
Well, I think it's that, like what we've talked about, like when you're both willing the good of the other and watching out for what each other needs, not just one, which I think can get out of balance in the little years if the mom, like in the case of if a mom is staying home with their kids and it's just constant, it can be a lot more about like, how do you make her survive? But I think wives, we also have to be aware of, even in our overwhelm, what do our husbands need to be refueled as well? Because if we're giving each other time for that, then we're a lot more motivated to continually give each other that time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to hit one more question, but Diane, I know you have a verse, and do you have something too, Elizabeth, right?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think that there's, especially now, because we know so much more that mom, information you didn't have access to when we were little, about attachment, about sleeping, co-sleeping or not, or there's so much information out there that I think there is now this added pressure to the little years that we have got to get it right, that we have to be available all the time, that we have to be patient all the time, or we're ruining our kids. And I think that there's really good things that are coming out of some of that information, and we're aware of a lot of things. But then I also see the enemy just destroying moms with this over-awareness that we're supposed to be this perfect human that totally leaves out God's grace and his redemption and the Holy Spirit. And then I also know, not just think, but know those, the years when you feel totally overwhelmed, totally not well suited to the task before you, like the needs are so endless. Those are the years that God is deeply, deeply forming you and growing your capacity. You know, so often moms of one kid and they hear we have four and they're like, oh my gosh, how do you do four? Well, it's not because we had some great ability that other parents don't have. We were overwhelmed with one too, and then overwhelmed with two, and then overwhelmed with three. Like, but it is that tension, the friction, the hardness that if you let it and if you are willing to change and grow with it and admit your weakness, that is really growing you and shaping you and teaching you what it is your kids need and what they're going to need in the future. That's why we always talk about that book, Domestic Monastery by Ronald Rollheiser. But that was so, that was such a freeing read for me to recognize, okay, yes, all of these years of really hard, because we've had little kids for a very long time. We didn't have them all close together. So somebody has been very little and very needy for 13 years. And we say we're not actually all that well suited for the little years, like the older kids, like having a 13-year-old. This is my favorite stage by a million. Like, it's so fun. Older kids are so much fun. I know not everybody feels that way. But I wouldn't say that Brooke and I were particularly well suited for the little years. And yet they've been the most forming thing we've ever done. And I now we can look back and say we're so grateful for how hard they were. So I think if there's one thing I wish I could have seen in, and we're still in the trenches, but especially when so many of them were really little, is that there is, there's so much happening in you that you can't see and you won't be able to see until that season is over. And so just trusting that and embracing it and being okay with the fact that it doesn't feel like you're killing it. Like, that's okay.
Never.
Yeah. I think very few moms of littles feel like they're killing it, especially if you have multiple, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I certainly didn't. You know, I remember thinking, I thought I was so patient just by my very nature until I had children. And then I felt like I had like a hair trigger temper, like they could just push a button and I could react. But I really hear what you're saying, Elizabeth. And I think we need to remember that we, our children are being formed.
Yeah.
And we are part of that process. But we're being formed too. It just can't be a mistake that God wired our bodies to have children when we're very young and still immature. And, you know, I joke, you know, I wasn't really ready to have kids till my 50s.
I love that joke.
I joke, but it's, I'm serious. It wasn't until then, and I'm maybe a really late bloomer and maybe wasn't raised with this kind of thinking. It wasn't until then that I felt like I knew myself and was confident enough to say, okay, I have to be who I am. I can't, I can't live the way other people think is the ideal way of living. And there, and my kids suffered for it. No doubt about it. Me trying to be what I thought a real Christian woman was supposed to be. And a couple of verses that just stood out because they're underlined in my Bible and starred and circled and all sorts of stuff. And they're both in Philippians chapter 2, which I just love. Philippians chapter 2. One is, one's 3:7. It just caught my eye. I once thought all these things were so very important, but now I consider them worthless. And he has a spiritual point that Paul is making here to the Philippians. Yeah. But I think every mom needs to just kind of frame this. I once thought all of these things, make your list, were so important.
Yeah.
But now I consider them worthless. And then at the beginning of chapter 2, when we were talking about husbands and wives working together in unity, is there any encouragement from belonging to Christ? Any comfort from his love? In other words, are you finding that? Any fellowship together in the Spirit? Are your hearts tender and sympathetic? Then make me truly happy by agreeing wholeheartedly with each other, loving one another, and working together with one heart and purpose. Don't be selfish. Don't live to make a good impression on others. Be humble, and so on and so on. This is just needs to be etched in the heart of every husband and wife, every mom who's an introvert or an extrovert and feels like she's having to stay home too much. And really all through the rest of our lives, if we are going to be formed into the image of Christ, there's no better way than the home and your children.
Agreed.
The people who know you so well. And they are doing a good work in you. by their very demands, by learning so much. I mean, we could write a book on everything that could be learned and should be learned in these intense parenting years.
I was just going to say, because I love the book of Philippians, I got to teach through it. And what you don't see in the English, but in the original language, that if is actually also since. He's not saying, is there encouragement in Christ? It's since there is encouragement in Christ, since there is consolation of love, like since there is fellowship of the Spirit, since there is affection and compassion that you're receiving from God. Make my joy complete and go be like that. I love that, because it sounds like he's asking, is there? But he's saying, no, there is.
Because there
and
is.
And as you receive from him, then you can then... It's like what Jesus said, abide in me and you will bear much fruit.
Yes, so, and we've heard this idea that we give, when we're Spirit-filled givers, we give out of abundance, not out of depletion. So that's all the more you have to be making sure you're going after what your heart, what your soul needs.
If you're enjoying this content and you want to go deeper, we have an amazing resource that we want to tell you about. It's the Intentional Film Series, Raising Passionate Jesus Followers. Now, this is an incredible tool for you for spiritual formation in the family. And we created this film series to help parents in their God-given task to raise and disciple their own children. Now, our hope is that we're able to help you and give you some of the tools that I know we so desperately need as we're in the process of raising our kids, and Phil and Diane have actually raised their kids. This is a 9-session film series on the process of what raising a passionate Jesus follower actually looks like. There's some workable solutions in here. There's a bunch of wisdom from the scriptures, and there's a bunch of practical help in your journey as you are raising your children. We cover all sorts of things like parental roles, goals versus values. What is discipline versus punishment? How do I create a heart of obedience in my child where they actually want to obey? What does a heart of self-control look like? Or how do I even help my child in the process of character development? We cover that and so many more things. You can use this film series in a variety of ways. You can use it at your home, preferably with your spouse if that's applicable, with a group of friends or in your community, or even through your local church. All you need to do is head over to our website, intentionalparents.org, click on film series, and then follow the prompts. We have a bunch of other resources there that you can check out, but we do pray that this blesses you in your pursuit of raising passionate Jesus followers.
So we unfortunately... That was more than a half hour for that one response. I knew it was going to be. I knew it. I just knew it. I wanted to finish up with one question. This is going to be quick, and I want it to be quick, but I also think it's an important one. Best ways to motivate and encourage grandparents to be more intentional with humility. So what I think this person is asking is, how can you encourage grandparents, your parents, to be more intentional? And I think he's saying for himself with humility. I think that's what that's what they're saying.
Maybe he's hoping for humility on the part of the grandparents.
That's how I was first reading. That's what I was thinking first.
Because
so I want you guys
I've
to answer that.
I've seen this problem over and over in, and we'll speak for our generation, the grandparent generation, of we did this, we did it right. And so we're going to tell you how to do it. And when your kids come to our house, we're going to do it our way. No. Banish the thought. You will alienate and undermine this amazing potential for influence on your family that you have as grandparents. So we're all tempted to do it. But we never raised our children. We did not raise our children in this world.
Yes.
We raised our children in a world long past. And that's where the humility comes in.
Yeah.
Our grandchildren are responding to this world far different than we saw our kids act at their age, because they're being raised in a completely different world.
Yeah.
Anxiety levels are off the charts. There's hardly a child alive right now who's not showing all sorts of signs of anxiety, depression as well, and so many other things. So I think we have to start with the right mindset. And then the idea that we are actually here to serve the needs, not necessarily all the wants, but the needs of our family. So yeah. You never stop parenting. You did not stop parenting when your kid turned 18. But you are now coming alongside your children and looking for insight, praying about, asking them about, how can I help you?
Yeah.
And specifically, not just doing the things I want to do, although those are important, but really, honestly, how could I serve you?
Yeah.
And, you know, if you have a daughter or a daughter-in-law who is in the middle of raising littles right now, and maybe various age kids right now, there's probably no more sweet of a question than, how can I serve you? Mm-hmm. And I doubt anybody else in her life is asking that question sincerely. So it's a stance for grandparents. And I'm not sure the adult kids are the best ones to address this, because it can be very threatening to grandparents.
So what would you say to the, so let me, because I know Phil's averse, like holding you at bay. He's going to get us in a minute. Okay. But no, just for the grandparents, give me just a couple practical things.
Yes.
What would be a way to encourage grandparents? Like, hey, we'd love for you to be more involved with our kids' lives, right? But so the posture obviously need to be humble. Anything else practically to the grandparent? Phil?
You go.
Well, that's one of the verses I have.
Yes. And it's practical?
It's practical.
I was absolutely very conceptual just a few minutes ago.
But you're deep and conceptual. What can I say? So I think obviously this question is from someone whose grandparents aren't doing what Diane just said. They have the calling and responsibility to do. And by the way, let me give that verse first, okay?
Yes.
Because, you know, like most of you know, I like to read Proverbs every day. I've read it a gazillion times. So today's the 13th. We're recording this on the 13th. So it's Proverbs 13:22. A good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. And in the New Living, it just says, good people leave an inheritance to their grandchildren. Okay. Wow. So God, that's talking about money, but it's more than money.
Yeah.
So I think to state the obvious, we have grandparents that listen to this podcast. So, we have a privilege. If you're following Jesus, there's a constant death to the self-life. Jesus said, if you want to follow me, take up your cross, crucify yourself and follow me.
Yes.
And that's where the great adventure starts. That's where the abundance, that's where the joy is giving. Yeah. That's why Jesus said it's more blessed to give than to receive, which is in that verse is actually in the book of Acts. But anyway, there's this joy that grandparents get to have. So, and then of course our society is saying the opposite, make as much money as you can, retire as soon as you can and go, you know, whatever, go buy a boat, go do your favorite thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we're saying, no, the opposite. A godly mother, a godly father, when you become a grandparent, you leave an inheritance to your children's children. So that's like flat out in the Bible. Mm-hmm. Okay. But how you do it. So they're saying with humility, like whether they're saying, how do I approach my parents with humility, or how do I get them to be humble?
Yeah.
And I think the answer to that is the word appeal.
Yes.
Okay. And this is my practical thing. It's how you approach them.
I'm very glad you're saying
okay. And it's in 1 Timothy 5. First two verses, and this has many applications. Do not sharply rebuke an older man, but rather appeal to him as a father, to the younger men as brothers, the older women as mothers, the younger women as sisters in all purity. This is a whole bunch in there, but I think what is clear here is when someone is in authority over you, you're commanded to honor your father and your mother, so you don't come at them like, you're being a terrible grandparent. You're never helping. You never even ask to help, and you never visit. You know, that's not going to fly. But you can appeal and say, I need you in my kids' lives, and we're longing to have you involved, and we want you to be with our kids. We need you. Would you consider? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, you could talk as a couple, like, what are some of the things we really would like to see? And then say, would you guys think about this? And you approach them with honor, and you appeal to them because they're of the position they're in, and that will bear more fruit. Mm-hmm. And I think it will, unless they're just super horrible people, which most people aren't, you know, it's like most people are like our friend Emerson says, Emerson Eggers says, most people are good-hearted people.
Yeah.
And I think if you approach them and ask them to think about it and pray about it and tell them what you would love to see happen, that you might get some response.
And be specific, you know, a bullet point of things that they could do with the kids or the ways that they can be invested in their lives.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Be specific, because I think most people, as they get older, are not just thinking little kid years anymore. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or if we do, we think back with some rose-colored glasses and we're not necessarily
blessed. And maybe... So it might be expensive. Like John Mark was just in town for one day, and Matthew and I, two brothers and dad, we got like an hour together, and he was saying, he just moved to Southern California. Yeah, yeah. You and Mom come down anytime. Come down and take the kids to Disney. And I'm thinking, how many thousands of dollars will that cost?
Yeah.
That would be an expensive ask.
Yes.
But he was saying, what he was really saying was, come on down and take the kids to Disneyland, because they live, 20 minutes from it right now.
Do something fun.
So do something fun with my kids.
That
and maybe
sounds fun.
You don't have to spend thousands.
You
but
could just
go
tell
down
him
and take
him
to the
say,
beach.
Just write another book, you know? Yeah.
I was just going to say, though, you know, I'm as I'm listening to this, our context is that we have a good relationship, us four.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So that we recognize is not every situation. Yeah. And I just want to advocate or highlight some maybe potential landmines that you might not see. If you try to take our dynamic or some of these conversations and apply it to a classically dysfunctional family, meaning there's been different abuses or divorce or crazy living by mom or dad or mom and dad, and you have a classic dysfunctional by psychological standards, a dysfunctional family that you all play these different roles, which you were not designed to play. I would just say this solution or this way might not be the most effective, because it really does a whole different set of tools and understanding, and you're not playing by the same rules. And so I want to highlight that, because if that's your situation, you're like, I did the stuff, I said the thing, but it just didn't work.
Yeah, we're saying something, we'd love you to be involved more, might be disastrous.
It might be the worst thing for you to do.
That's
in your
where
situation.
I think getting really specific is actually really good. Look for in that family scenario, assuming nothing is unsafe, but maybe there's things that make you feel uncomfortable where you wouldn't want them to do anything with them. But maybe look for what are the things that they could do with them? Mm-hmm. What are ways that they could connect? Maybe you have older kids and they could take them out to lunch. You feel totally comfortable with that.
Yeah.
And you know that they would be connecting. So ask them specifically to do that.
Yeah.
Versus if there is dysfunction, you might not want to open up the whole thing of like, we just want you to be involved.
And that's a big one. So I think that's why I just want to caveat that. And that leads into
Brooke,
one last tiny question, if you will also be so gracious with me, is because it plays into this one, is someone asked, how do you navigate discipline of toddlers with babysitters or family? And I think this also plays into that, because it's a really tricky dynamic. I know that we've all decided, like, when it comes to discipline, your guys' strategy is distraction with our kids, because mostly
a little gentle correction.
Yeah. But there's not like a lot of discipline in that sense, because really that is our job, and it can actually hurt some of your relationship.
But see, that only works because you guys are doing such a good job of disciplining. But I have a friend who recently came back from watching her grandchildren and is so exhausted because she kept saying, they need to go to your intentional conference. and what she was really saying is, they're too hard for me to handle, to be responsible to be the one responsible for the kids.
Yeah.
While the parents went away. She has this good heart. She adores her grandchildren. She wanted for the best of their marriage, for her, the parents to get some time away. But so you're assuming that these kids are at least somewhat obedient and cooperative.
That's
and
true. That's a great another
good attitudes. And if that's not the case, then it's too much to put on a grandparent who has a very unique and special relationship with their kids to be able to help care for them. So then you need to go back to the beginning and watch, are you really training your children well?
Mm-hmm. And we're not specialists, but I do think it's important to say our disposition or our encouragement. And if this is my encouragement, if you guys disagree, feel free to pipe in. But that, as far as family or babysitters disciplining your kids, I mean, we have
come to the conviction that is our responsibility mm-hmm. as parents. They will not receive it as discipline most of the time from a babysitter no. or from a family member. It will probably, yeah. and I right. don't mean to use dramatic language, but it will probably feel more abusive in some ways mm-hmm. because it's so, it's not, yeah, it's not mm-hmm. built out of the close love yeah. bond and relationship. I so mm-hmm. I think distraction is a good tool, but Diane, great caveat that that could actually be the case or well, harder sometimes.
I think we definitely all agree, all four of us, that discipline is a role given by God to the parents mm-hmm. to carry out. Mm-hmm. But I think training can be carried out by anybody in the close circle. Mm-hmm. So grandparents, babysitters can enforce the training that you're already yes. doing in the home. Yes. So it's not that a grandparent or a babysitter can't ever correct a three-year-old. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just not realistic. No, like, literally, we had a friend watching our kids, so we could all have a meeting, and Sloane was having a defiant moment because she was following something Birdie did and was out in the middle of the street. And we have a great relationship with this babysitter. She's in our community and a friend. And she was like, I was just trying to decide how I should handle that in that moment, because I didn't want to like overly correct her, but I needed to get her out of the street. So she was kind of talking to me of like, what would you like me to do in that situation?
Shout
you
know? Out to Megan and Dylan. Thank you,
yes,
Megan.
You guys are amazing.
Thank you, Megan and Dylan.
So I think there is training and yeah. some mild correction yeah. that just has to be done when anybody's yeah. watching
yeah,
your kids.
That's a great distinction. Yes. Yeah,
you
that,
know,
that,
so
that is
that's,
different.
That's even an added reason why we need to be careful who we entrust
yes.
watching them, yes. you know, to yes. trust that they're not going to yell at them or like do something so different than how we would do it. But I do think that if grandparents or babysitters are going to be regularly in your children's lives, you do have to figure out different strategies. And I know, Mom, you've been so intentional. I don't have like super compliant children. So it's not like they do everything you ask the first time, but you've already
sometimes
told the story on here with Sloane and giving her a foot bath to kind of calm her down and get her into bed. Like, you're always creatively trying to look for solutions, but yeah. I know not every grandparent is that way. And so I think there's that even has to be put on the parents to teach whoever's watching their kids.
Yeah, you
here's
really
what
do.
I'd like you to do if they, mm-hmm. if they, you can't get them to stop fighting.
Oh,
or here's, you know,
we get to reinforce what you're teaching all the time.
Yeah.
So we're teaching and training, and I know your parents have told you this.
Yeah.
You know, we're quoting scripture. What a privilege that is. Because the kids then are hearing, oh, it's not just my mom and dad, like my
oh,
mom
gosh,
and pops are,
and pops are on this too.
So yeah, it's just when it comes to the heart of discipline, like mm-hmm. do they need a spanking, the mm-hmm. rod of correction. We can't do that. It's yeah. a gentle mm-hmm. correction.
Yeah.
Anything beyond that, it's like, who are you? You know, yeah. you're mm-hmm. your fun
you're
pops.
Mom,
why
yeah.
are you raising your voice at me?
Yeah.
You know, I do remember that Proverbs, and you'll be able to tell me where it is, Phil, but it's just so ingrained in my mind because I had to retrain the way I spoke to my own kids. And I use this constantly comes to me my mind with my grandkids, especially in those defiant moments. Sweetness of speech increases persuasiveness,
yeah.
which is another way of framing your directions towards your children, your grandchildren, in a really positive way. Mm-hmm. Instead of, no, stop, you won't be able to do this if you do that, and shameful
yeah.
means, it's sweetness of speech. And it's not just speech, but like, for instance, one of my granddaughters needs a lot of physical touch and connection mm-hmm. to be cooperative. Mm-hmm. And just learning that little key about her means that I see her.
Mm-hmm.
And I see a way as a leader, you know, good leadership, all knows, read good leadership books for these mm-hmm. kind of tips. But a good leader knows that people need to be known
mm-hmm.
and they will follow you if they have a sense that you know them. That's part of being a compelling leader. So in leading this little four-year-old, I noticed that I have to be less confrontational and more compelling.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to be physically connected with her as much as possible. And I need persuasiveness with her.
Oh, I know
and
that.
She responds
I know,
to that.
I know which four-year-old you're talking
yes.
about.
Yes.
And,
whereas my
yes,
oldest grandson,
right.
I just need logic. Just
yeah.
speak on a very logical, he doesn't want my emotion. He doesn't want to feel manipulated. Just go about him logically.
Yeah.
Yes, no. If you do this, yes. No, go call your parents. It's up to them.
I mean, then that's, we get the call. Alma and Pops were wondering.
Yes. Alma and Pops.
No, no, they're like, I was wondering, but they said I have to call you. It's like, yeah, yes, that's right. Yes. That's exactly right. You do need to call.
So your grandchildren and let them know that you know them. Study them and listen to their parents. And we have just thrown a whole hodgepodge at you because you're talking all the way from really good, intentional grandparents.
Yes.
Who want to do well. And all the way to guarding your children from grandparents who say they want to do well, but could add a toxic element into your children's lives that you need to guard them from.
Yes. And if you have a hard time saying this to your parents, so I want to say something to the grandparents that your kids might not say, but I can say it because I'm not related to you, which is, if as long as there's like healthy parameter, you know, healthy functioning family, we want you involved with our kids. I think many of us really do. But often it is your unawareness to certain ways in which you're moving through the world, maybe not choosing to adjust to the culture and time, which is a big one. That's a big one. You have to adjust to the culture and time, not taking the time to understand the complexities or the differences of these kids and putting them in the bucket of, well, that's not how it was when we were, you know, that's not how it happened when we were raising. It was like, and like you said, Diane and Catherine Hill said beautifully, like
you were never their age.
You were never their age. And so if there isn't that like desire to jump in and to learn in a posture of humility and understanding, not pushing away who you are, but if you're able to like come in with humility and understanding, like most kids do want you to be involved in your grandkids' lives. They want that. But there's these barriers, or even if it's like lines of communication, we know from the study of families that parents ultimately are the ones, especially if they're still married, that dictate how a family communicates. They just do. Mm-hmm. Kids can't usually go upstream on that. So if you are not liking the interactions or communication with your family, with your children, it is your job as the parent still, maybe even in your 50s, 60s, 70s, to say, hey, let's be more open about some stuff. Yeah. Let's talk about stuff. Let's become that. So just to empower you, grandparents, you have the power to do that. Most of your children want you involved in your grandkids' lives, especially if there's not brokenness. And yes, there's always going to be tension and social dynamics and challenges, but like, welcome to the club. We all have that. All four of us have that. We still have conversations all the time about different things we're navigating. And you know, we have that extra fun layer of working with each other. So you have the whole other like organizational side, and then you have the relational side, and then you have the personal side. So anyway, I thank you everyone for joining this conversation and the Q&R. I hope we helped. Any final closing thoughts from anyone before we jump out? Phil, I know you're looking at scripture, but I don't know if this is
I'm trying to find the verse he said.
And which one?
The sweetness of speech.
Isn't it a different version?
There are so many verses on speech that I've been seeing in Proverbs, but that... No, she's right. I just can't...
It's in New American Standard because it was an early... That's what I read in the early years.
Yeah, I believe I have it underlined somewhere.
Well, if we find it, we can put it in the show notes.
Yes, we'll find it.
We
will put it in the show notes.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If this podcast has blessed you in any way, here's a few ways that you can partner with us in this ministry. First is to give. Intentional Parents is a nonprofit, and we rely on the generous giving of our partners. So please head over to our website, intentionalparents.org/give, if you would like to become one of our partners through giving. Second is to share it. If this has at all been helpful to you, we encourage you to share it with your friends, your family, and those that you know would be blessed by it. Third is to follow us on social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can find us on Instagram at intentional_parents. And lastly, if you would head over to iTunes, if you enjoyed today's episode, and leave a review on iTunes, this helps us bring more hope, help, and healing for families.